Everybody, Andy here again, down on the beach, as you might be able to hear from either the sound or see by the GPS location on this. And I'm going to talk about today. There's a particular radio program over here in the UK called Desert Island Discs. Very well known, very famous program, one that's been going for 30 odd years at least, I think now. And whenever I hear it, I always think to myself, how on earth could I narrow down my music to 8 tracks, which is what you're allowed to take on this mythical or supposed desert island? You're allowed to take 8 particular pieces of music, 1 luxury and 1 book. They give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, which I've never read either. So that keep me going. But trying to narrow 8 pieces of music down would be damn nigh impossible for me, because I always think of it in a couple of different ways. Do you take the 8 sort of favourite pieces of music, if you could get that far, that you've ever liked, type of thing? Or are you going to take the 8 that actually mean something to you, so you look at it from that way, something that reminds you of what you've left behind? So that's maybe a topic for something another day. But the other day they had a lawyer on there, a guy called Mike Mansfield, a very famous defence lawyer over here in the UK. But he told a really good story, I thought, about when he got to know a particular guy, had no idea who he was, and they got to get together via, you know, families, via their kids, as you do when you have kids, tend to meet other people's parents, etc., other children's parents. And he got to know this particular couple, and used to go around and see them quite a lot. And they were sitting there one particular day, and never had any idea what either did as a living. They never asked each other, you know, what job do you do? They just, you know, they were just friends. And no one cared about that sort of thing, which I think is quite nice. And they were sitting down one day, and the radio was on or something, and Mike Mansfield, the lawyer, was sort of drumming his fingers on the side of the table where they were sitting having coffee or something. It's that sort of thing that I would do. And the other guy said, you like a bit of drumming, do you? Into drumming? He said, yeah, I do try and play a bit. He said, I'm a drummer as well. He said, I've got a nice drum kit upstairs. You want to come and have a look and have a little play? So, yeah, okay. So they go up in there, and they go up into this room, and this guy's got this enormous drum kit. And then this, you know, Mike Mansfield's thinking, hang on a minute, there's something wrong here. Then he looks around around the walls, and he sees all these posters about Pink Floyd. He suddenly realises that this particular guy that he's now friends with and whose drum kit he's now playing is none other than Nick Mason, the drummer from Pink Floyd. But he had no idea. Okay, he wasn't a huge sort of rock music fan, although obviously he knew Pink Floyd. But I thought that was a great little story, because it just shows you what you can do when you don't know who the other person is. There's no side to it, there's no expectation, you're not starstruck or anything like that. You build up a genuine friendship before you find out who the other person is, type of thing. But it also reminded me of a guy that I used to know here in Hastings, a guy unfortunately passed away last year. And I used to see him a fair amount, especially to do with Hastings rock and local music. He used to get CDs, he was the editor of a local free magazine. And I used to go around his house, usually to try and pick up a couple of CDs that he was going to lend me of local bands for my Hastings rock show when that's on the air. But whenever you went round to see John, it was always a case of you'd be there to nip in for 5-10 minutes, and before you know it, 2 hours had gone, because he'd be telling you, he'd be discussing music, just every type of music under the sun generally. But you'd also be hearing his reminiscences, because he had worked in the music industry one way or the other for most of his adult life, whether it be editing. I think he was very high up in the New Musical Express paper. He employed people like Bob Harris, who's a DJ, a very respected DJ over here now, back in the sort of 60s or something. And he knew lots of people. He worked in publicising, and he did loads and loads of interviews and worked for, say, various other magazines, and got to meet just about everybody you can think of. And some of the stories he used to tell me were great. And his little book where he kept all of his contact details in was a sort of veritable who's who of, who, you know, of people in the music business. And he used to get rung up by all these different people. But he told me that nice little story about Ian Dury, who he knew fairly well. And he used to ring John up every so often to talk about this or that, you know, whether it's to do with his records or music or live work or whatever it was. And his wife used to answer the phone, and she used to come into John, hey, John, it's that Mr. Durex on the phone. which I thought was great. But some of his other stories, which I can't really repeat here, there was a great one about Meatloaf, who he went to see Meatloaf to interview him on the morning that Meatloaf had been declared bankrupt. Just as he sort of walked in the room, he was sort of putting the phone down from getting this this message from his lawyer or something to say that he'd been made bankrupt. And he said that, I've forgotten what his real name is, it Marvin something, isn't it? It was sort of in tears, but he did tell me another story about Elvis Presley, which I certainly can't tell you because I'm sworn to secrecy. But let's just say that for keeping quiet, John was presented with something that must be worth an absolute fortune. It was like a little pack of 7-inch vinyl singles of all the early singles that Elvis Presley released, all the Hound Dogs and that sort of era, you know, in what I classify as his great, really great era, when he was really up and coming artist and hitting the world scene, in a nice little presentation box, all nice and sealed and everything. And I said, cool, I'd love that, you know. But he wouldn't let it out of his sight. But it's just all these little stories. I just thought I'd share some of those with you, because we've probably got our own stories about different things as well. But when we talk about celebrities or musical people or something, at least we all know who we're all talking about, so we can relate to it. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. Thanks for your time. I'll speak to you again soon. Goodbye.